Okay, I'd like to convene the Finance Committee.
And Representative Seifert, I'm surprised you're here. They had all over the news about a big breakfast meeting.
I'm at the little kids' table. I'm not connected to that. I'm not important enough.
Well, we're both here.
My meeting was yesterday without any food.
Oh, I see. But at any rate, we're not quite at a quorum, but we're getting close. Government office operating, so we've had several members that are present and balancing back and forth between the two committees. Representative Mahoney, if you could present the bill, and then we'll just temporarily lay it over if we don't have a quorum at the time you're done. So, Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr.
House File 1208.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Should I move it now or wait till we have a
quorum? We can't take any motions until, but if you can just go over the bill and then we'll deal with motions once we have the quorum.
I certainly can. And I've heard that yogurt and something else is, yogurt and fruit is served for breakfast at the governor's mansion, so I'm not sure that really is the greatest breakfast. I'm more of a bacon and eggs and sausage kind of guy, but I don't know about anybody else. But Mr. Chair and members, this is a well-traveled bill. I have a delete all amendment to it, and that's in your packet. It's a 200-page code bill. It implements the Executive Order 193 that consolidated the various code enforcement and licensing functions in the Department of Labor and Industry. There's a variety of ways I can do this. The last time I went through the bill with a fine-tooth comb, it was about 3.5 hours. I've done a 3.5 hour version, I've done an hour version, I've done a 20-minute version. And I'm going to do the half an hour version if I can, Mr. Chair. And members. And
I was hoping the 20 minutes to go right ahead.
I can do 20 minutes too. I will go off of the House summary.
No, but seriously, do what you need to do.
Members, I'll go off the House summary. This bill in the Article 1 is this revisor's instructions. Article 2, it transfers authority from Commerce, Health, and Admin. And the Board of Electricity to the Department of Labor and Industry. It creates the Construction Code Fund, which rather than having all the permit fees and inspection fees go to the general fund and then over to Labor and Industry, we're going to reverse that. All those funds and fees go to Labor and Industry and then go back to the general fund. They found that the Health Department had the best enforcement layout. They are overlaying that type of an enforcement division on all the other codes, whether they're construction building codes, electrical, plumbing, pipe fitting codes. Let me get to Article 3 so I remember what's in it. This gives the commissioner authority to do education with the building officials and building inspectors. It does a lot of technical and technical changes and language updates to the building code. It creates, under the page 5, this is somewhat related to the fiscal note, which we'll get to. The elevator inspectors, inspection and elevator inspector, we had the authority to do escalator inspections, but we never did do them because we didn't have the fiscal ability to do it. This bill gives that fiscal ability. It defines the membership and duties of the Construction Code Advisory Council. It changes some of the surety bonds and the liability insurance limits, generally raising them for contractors and mobile home sales, manufactured home sales, and repair people. It has the electrical board. It has electrical definitions. Well, in Article 5 deals with electrical. It puts in a tremendous amount of definitions, such as master electrician, lineman, and a variety of other things, maintenance electrician, master elevator constructor, certifies contractor language. One of the things they found with apprentices and unlicensed persons doing work in the trades, and this crosses all boundaries, is generally the apprentice is supposed to be directly supervised. What they were finding is that the apprentices had cell phones, and the direct supervision would say, take out your cell phone and send me a picture, and I'll tell you if you did it right. Now, this defines... I'm sorry. You have to stop laughing someday. This better defines what direct supervision is. It reconstitutes the electrical board as an authoritative board. It does not give it all the power that it had prior to this. They, I'll just read it here. It's 12 members. This was a serious bone of contention and negotiation with the department and the governor's office and all the licensed crafts. We've come to agreement. This is, I'll make this a template for the electrical plumbing board, the electrical board, the plumbing board, and the high pressure board. It constitutes 11 or 12 members. The electrical board is 12. The commissioner is a voting member, and it takes a two-thirds majority to move things through the board. That protects everyone. If the board votes on a two-thirds majority, the commissioner will move these things forward into rules and take care of all of that. All these three boards that were created in this bill, are primarily their duties are the licensing and adopting the code. The other part to this is their inspection, electrical inspection fee increases, and we'll get to that in the fiscal pages. Members, in the state we have contract electrical inspectors. We have approximately 115, some full-time, most full-time, a few part-time. They have not had a fee increase, and they are paid only through their fees. They've not had an increase in 8 years, 9 years now. This bill gives them an increase. Many of them are driving 30, 40, and 50 miles, particularly in the more rural areas. It's getting harder and harder to find people who are willing to do that job. Hopefully we can get them to a point where they can make a decent living. There are licensed electricians. They have to be. They can certainly go out and build buildings and make an awful lot more money, but we want good, competent people inspecting so that we don't have fires or problems. I'll quickly move through this. The plumbing board, there were some concerns about... Representative Howes had a question in another, in a previous committee about an agreement several years ago, three, 4 years ago, about low voltage people, whether it is those doing the garage door openers or the electronic door openers or setting up rooftop units. That is in here. We codified that particular agreement, and it's in a couple of different places, so I can give you the page in line if you'd like later. I won't try to put everybody into that. This creates a plumbing board. This also creates a restricted plumbing license. This is probably the biggest surprise for me. Cities under 5,000 since 1933 have not been required to have a plumbing license to do plumbing. 8 years ago when I came, I offered the bill that removed that exemption, and I thought I had a firestorm going on in my office. That was done this year, and I literally have had one conversation, and the conversation was in support of it. I guess people have realized that towns under 5,000 should have licensed plumbers doing their plumbing work. It makes sense. I don't think there's any difference in the charge that a licensed or an unlicensed plumber in a city under 5,000 did, so we grandfathered in all those particular people, so there should be no disruption. The This recodifies in the Article 7 deals with water conditioning contractors and installers. There's a lot of technical and clarification language. This was negotiated throughout the summer with all parties concerned. There's some redundancy removed. There was a question in the prior committee about the exterior plasters and stuccos being removed from the list of general contractors, general installation specialties. It's just a redundancy, and we're removing it from one place. It's in another. Again, the insurance went up for manufactured homes. They have to carry higher liability insurance. The contractor recovery fund, which is something that it's kind of a place of last resort for people whose contractor has gone out of business. They had a $15,000 limit. We've raised that to $50,000 and increased the cost, and the contractors were part of that negotiations, and they're very comfortable with that number. Now, if you have a home that has a problem and your contractor's gone out of business, you can get up to $50,000. That still doesn't generally cover the whole cost, but it's a better way to do it. High-pressure piping, authority board, 12 members, two-thirds majority. The one thing that we've changed on this that is significant is the representatives of the industrial companies using high-pressure piping systems. Otherwise, everyone else has to have a license, high-pressure license. We have unregistered, unlicensed persons working in the state across all the licensed trades now have to register at the department when they're doing work in the state. We've had some problems in the past, and this kind of makes sure that we can figure out who is doing the work in the state, and we know who to go talk to if something went wrong. The apprenticeship board, we added language that if the commissioner chooses to ignore the or not go with the recommendations of the apprenticeship board, he or she would have to, in writing, explain to the board the reasons for refusal within 30 days. That kind of covers high points. Members, I don't think you have a fiscal note. What you have is a couple of sheets like this. And I will go over those rather than a fiscal note because these actually are clearer. At the top of one, neither one are really titled that well, but that's my fault, no one else's. At the top of one of them, it has the Department of Labor, in the upper left-hand corner, is Department of Labor and Industry, CCLD fee changes. This sheet defines the fee changes in this bill. The Contract Recovery Fund currently has an annual fee of $1,583,000. This bill, the proposed annual increase goes to $2,613,000 for a change of $1,030,000. And underneath that, it tells on residential building contractors and remodelers based on gross annual receipts. That's their the charge that they have to pay. Again, this was negotiated amongst the department and the contractors, and I've heard no complaints about it. Next down is the electrical inspection fees. All this money goes into the new construction code fund. Currently, they collect $24.5 million. They will collect $29.5 million under these proposed changes. 85% of that money, these fee increases, go for that pay increase for the inspectors. The balance of it is for operations, but the 15% is for operations, but most of that operations is an expanded education for inspectors and consumers. You get down to the bottom third of the page where it says electrical certification forms. There's a reduction of $117,000 because they went to online inspection fees. They were having to charge at least a dollar for every sheet of paper. They expect this to be dramatically different. You have a $19,000 increase in the electrical licensing fees. That's where a person gets their license and or loses their license, having a duplicate fee. The last one is new fees, unlicensed electrical registration, restricted plumber's license, and elevator operating permit. That's the largest new fee. It's $2.1 million. That, I spoke earlier about the escalators inspection. There's a $100 charge for an escalator permit and inspection, and this allows them to do that. We had that authority. We just never had the money to do it in the state prior to now. And that is the fiscal part of this particular bill. Well, I guess I should go to the next sheet, and I will quickly...
Why don't you just let me announce for some time, I think, since the arrival of Representative Finstead, we've had a quorum, so just so people are aware. Yeah, continue.
Mr. Chair and members, I will just do the top third there where it talks about expenditures and revenues. The bottom line is that all this money goes into the new construction code fund. There should be a balance, and if you look at the about a third of the way down, transfer from construction code fund, $1.6 million in 08 and $1.5 million in 09. What this tells us is that there's about a $3.1 million excess in this particular department. That will be transferred from the construction code fund to the general fund. Members, that is it in a nutshell, as quickly as I possibly can do it. So if I can move this bill, Mr. Chair, and then stand for questions.
We're at that point. What we'll do is I noticed Representative Finstead was looking at the papers rather carefully, and I assume has looked at the minutes. Would you like to move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Finstead moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We need to move the division report. So the chair moves the Higher Education Workforce Development Finance Division report for House File 1208, the second committee in Grossman. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Mahoney, now if you'd care to move the bill.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to move for House File 1208, the second committee engrossment, and move it to, I think it has to go to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that motion is before us, and now I understand you have a couple of author's amendments, so and that should be in the members' packets. Do you want to take H1208A7 first?
Mr. Chair, this is a, I have a delete all amendment to the second committee engrossment,
right,
and that's actually what I did.
Take that first, and then these are amendments to
correct,
okay.
Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A070925 delete all amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? That gets the bill in the form that the author would like. Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. And then we now have the two smaller amendments. So the A7, would you like to take that one?
Mr. Chair, the A7 is a, what this amendment does is allow 180 days after the adoption of a code before it goes into effect. One of the problems we found is that we adopt a code and it's online the next day. We're supposed to have that under, we're supposed to be using that the next day. Building contractors, construction workers need some time to learn within the new code. And this gives them that 180 days to publish it, have some classes, and get people to understand what it is. So it's been agreed to by the department, by the contractors, and everybody that's been involved in this bill.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. And then we have the amendment H1208AA.
At this particular time, I'm going to lay that one aside. There's still one member that we need to contact to make sure that he or she is comfortable with that particular amendment.
Okay, so that's withdrawn.
That is withdrawn.
Okay, we now have the bill before us as amended. Any further discussion? Representative Severson had his hand up some time, but we'll just take an order. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. And going back to the Department of Labor, the fee changes that you've got for 2008-2009, this reflects about a $1 million increase in the fees that are going to be collected, and I was wondering if there was a projection in the numbers of construction companies and those labor companies that have gone out of business because of the housing slump that we've had in the last 2 years here. I know that there's been a significant decrease in the amount of houses being sold in the last couple of years, particularly in the central Minnesota area, and I think that's true throughout the state. And I was just wondering if these numbers are based on a future projected revenue increase that was based on a market 2 years ago, or whether they're taking that slump into effect.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, I don't know. I can't imagine that when these fees were being negotiated last summer that they knew the slump was going to be as bad as it was. The department is here. Their fiscal person is here. She certainly can come up and answer that if she's got a better answer than I do. And I doubt that she does, as she's shaking her head no. So I don't know that they took those into account. No one knew that that slump was as bad as it is. I will say in the bill, and I don't have that particular page at the top of my head, there is a provision if the contractor recovery fund does not generate enough money to cover its expenses, or in other words, there's more people taking that $50,000 out than contractors putting money in. There's a provision for a $100 surcharge to replenish the fund. These are large and small companies. They pretty much knew what they were getting into when they did the negotiation, and it's appropriate. So I can't give you a better answer than that, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, I think, you know, we do have a lot of small construction companies who are in the business, got into the business when there was a strong building economy in the state, and now are just struggling to make ends meet. And my concern would be that as we continue to load up fees and we're driving more of them out of business, not giving them the ability to work their business. It becomes oppressive at some point, and I think this just adds to it. That's just my input onto this, and I would hope that we could have some sympathy, particularly for those smaller ones that are struggling at this point.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, I agree. The residential building contractors and this recovery funding, that's one I'm going to work off of here. If they have less than $1 million in sales, their proposed fee for that recovery is $180 a year. $160 a year. And $1 million to $5 million, it's $210. You're correct. We do need to be sensitive to that, but I don't think a $60 or a $60 increase is going to force them out of business. My bigger concern is pumping.
Okay, Representative Severson, is that okay? And then we have Representative Fair.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, I'm just wondering if this bill will address the problem that I've been hearing from some folks about with timeliness of receiving the electrical licenses. Apparently, there's been a fair amount of backlog with the department when people apply for these licenses, and I see with these fees going up. Is that going to help address the problem? Do you think that that's, you know, what's part of this bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Taylor, I have not heard that. I would suspect it is, but Mr. Schultz from the board is here, and I'm sure he can address that. I've not heard that, and I suspect it's more the combination of the departments than a problem with the fees. They've, in the past, had not had that particular problem.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Schultz. I'm with the Department of Labor and Industry, previously with the Department or with the Board of Electricity. The department did experience some difficulty in part because of the combination of all of the different licenses that came due at the same time. The residential builders, the residential contractors, as well as master electricians, all came due at the same time, and it did provide some taxing of the system. However, the department is working on ways to minimize those in the future. There were also some equipment malfunctions. Part of the problem, I think, was also that people weren't getting their license cards. However, their licenses were actually renewed. So they weren't actually unlicensed. They were licensed, but they didn't get the documentation.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
I had a side conversation going there, so excuse me.
Yeah, and Mr. Schultz. So it is your estimation then that this problem has been rectified or is in the process of that? Because it wasn't just this year. Actually, last year or the year before, there was a similar situation, and the contractors, different people, had said that they were certainly concerned about not wanting to, being prevented from going to the job site and starting their work without the license, and yet, when spring rolls around, they need to be on the ground moving. So I just would like to make sure that, any of these, the new increases and whatever bumps you might have been able to work out will smooth this process out for people.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, the department and previously the Board of Electricity did try to make changes to make it more easy for contractors and other applicants to get their licenses in the most simple manner, the most expedient manner. The real problem is that the license application process does have some complications to it. We've encouraged applicants to submit their applications well in advance of the due date. We provided instructions that are very similar to the instructions that you get with your with the Department of Revenue tax forms, line-by-line instructions to try to minimize the errors that people make on their applications. Most of the delays occur with those people where their applications are incomplete or have errors and there's corrections that need to be made. We continue to work on that to try to identify the problems, and it's unfortunate that it's as complex as it is, but it's not provisions of the department that make it that complex. It's compliance with other provisions of the law.
Okay, we have Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move that section 326.40 on page 94 be deleted. Mr. Chair, I know Representative Mahoney maybe has not heard about this because nobody knows about it. I'm one of those people who represents towns of under 5,000 people. And when you've got a guy who's maybe put in 10 or 20 toilets over the last 10 or 20 years, and he's got a neighbor lady who needs a faucet or a toilet replaced, I don't think they should have to go to a licensed plumber to do that. And we have a hard time in towns of 300 or 400. Representative Rookavine, I'm going to appeal to you on this because you've got a lot of small towns too. This is a compromise that's been in the books for 70 years that if you're in a small town and need the neighbor to replace your faucet, we're not going to make criminals out of them. And we have a lot of small towns in my district that don't have plumbers. But we have a lot of handymen who know how to replace a faucet and how to replace a toilet, and they've done it for years. And when you proposed this, there was a firestorm about 8 years ago, and we killed the bill then, and frankly, I'm going to recommend this whole bill be vetoed if this stays in the bill. And I don't care who agrees to it or who doesn't. We're the legislature, so whatever special interest group signed off on it, I frankly don't care. I hear enough complaints in my district about lack of plumbers, and I have to ask the question, what is the problem? If there's a problem, we can solve it some other way. But right now, I think the compromise works, and I would ask for member support.
Thank you. Could you repeat your motion, Representative Seifert?
I would move to delete Article 6, Section 6 of page 94.
Page 94, got it. Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this provision is not designed to go after a handyman or woman chasing down a faucet. This is a provision that is trying to make sure that we do not cross pipe water, clean water, potable water to non-potable water. This is a section that is trying to get decent waste, sewage and waste into to go out of the house and into the wastewater treatment facilities. There are an awful lot of suburbs under 5,000 that this particular bill affects. Representative Seifert, you know, I have worked with everyone. I have made sure that everyone knew that this bill was coming down. This bill has, I talked about this cities under 5,000 in every committee. It's been in many, many different places, and no one has come to talk about it. If your city is having problems with plumbers, I don't understand it. They never came and talked to me. They never said a word, whether it was northeast or northwest or southeast or southwest. No one has ever said a word about it. It's time that we let those cities under 5,000 have decent plumbing and not just have somebody putting copper up to galvanized pipe, which rots out in a couple of years, which is illegal. It's time that we have people actually putting in half-inch copper to water lines rather than running some plastic along that doesn't meet code. It's a huge issue if you do it wrong.
Mr. Chair, like I said, nobody knows about this. I mean, if I call my handyman back in Southwest Minnesota, I can tell you they're all going to be against this. But if it's a problem in the metro, just like with seatbelts and all the other stuff that they try to mandate around here, graduated driver's license, then do it for the 7-county metro only. And I might be open-minded on that, but we're not having the problems. I have not heard of one complaint or one problem in the western half of the state in relation to this. We have had this on the books for years and years and years. And I know the intent is, you know, well, you know, we don't intend for the neighbor putting the old lady's toilet in, but you know what? If you put it in the law, someone's going to go after them at some point. So I just, like I said, if, you know, if you want to keep it in, I may not be at breakfast this morning, but I'm going to see the person across the street at some point. And I feel very strongly about this.
Okay, we have Representative House was on the list, but if it was, you know, was it on this amendment or did you have something else?
I'll pass for a moment.
Okay, then we have Representative Instead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, this was in bill form last year, the year before, I believe, and it went through the licensing subcommittee. Can you tell me what the fate of that was then? This provision that we're talking about right now?
Well, if we're back in it this year again, I suspect that it didn't pass out of there.
Right, and to that point, Mr. Chair, so there were concerns raised at that point. Now, you might have not heard them this year, but it was tucked in a 500-page bill. This is an issue in rural Minnesota. And essentially what it comes down to is making criminals out of some of these handymen that are in these small little towns. And it's, I'll just call it what it is. It's a plumber protection piece that's going to push the handyman out of this area. It's going to increase cost to consumers to Grandma Rukavina that is, or Grandpa Rukavina that is needing a toilet put in. All right. You just look a little old this morning, Representative Rukavina. So this, I would support Representative Seifert's amendment, and I would ask and plead others to join us and help protect some of these smaller rural areas.
Okay, we have Representative Junkie.
Representative Mahoney, did you say something about grandfathering in when you came to this section?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, Everyone who's been doing plumbing in these particular towns can apply for it. It's a $90 license. They can apply for a master plumber's license, and I think it's, I don't have the restricted journeyman license numbers at the top of my head. And we've given them the ability to go and get their license at any time they want. I think it's a one-year window or better. So we're not telling anyone that they're going to be a criminal. We're not telling anyone that they can't do their particular job.
And so that's for major plumbing work. If you're building a house or repiping a business or whatever, they can get a $90 license and continue as a full-fledged plumber, basically. Number two, I don't believe this is pointed at handymen. I'm just trying to think. I live in a town of 18,000, and last time that I had my house remodeled because of some water damage, actually, from a washing machine overflowing, we had to redo bathroom and living room and kitchen and other things. At that point, I believe it was the carpenter that installed my new toilet. And our paper is loaded with handymen and women that do these types of jobs all the time, that I've not gotten one call in my town of 18,000 that they're somehow out of compliance or not licensed. No, but no one has called me. So my question is really putting in a toilet or changing a washer in a sink something a handyman can't do in the state legally? Is that what they're after? And if that's the case, I don't think jettisoning the whole section is the answer. I think allowing handymen to continue to do minor plumbing. You're talking about major reroutes of plumbing, sewer, water, septic systems, other things. I absolutely believe you should be a plumber to do that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, I appreciate that. Actually, by law in the state, in order to touch the water systems, you should be, you have to be, and you must be licensed. So the handyman unit in a town of under 5,000, you're correct. Your problem, though, is that these men and women often are doing it wrong. They are the ones that sometimes don't put an air test on to make sure it doesn't leak, and all of a sudden you've got sheetrock and you've got floors all destroyed and damaged. This came through when this particular provision came through. Every building official, every building inspector that I talked to thought this was probably the best idea. They get absolutely infuriated and tired of having to go back to these handy people and tell them they did it wrong and not issue a ticket because, you know, it's a $300 ticket, and tell them you got to go back and fix it. They've got to go back and inspect it again. Then they generally have to tell them what they did wrong the second time. You know, I don't understand why you wouldn't want a small town to have professionals doing the work that they say that they can do. These handy people put a little ad in the newspaper and get a bucket of tools and they go out and try and do something. Frankly, the old adage from most plumbing and heating shops is we love it when a homeowner does it because it costs twice as much when we come in and fix it. So members, I would ask that we not take this particular provision out, because this actually is improving the health of these towns and these people that live there. We are spending tons and tons of money to clean up the messes that our waters are right now. This is actually one of the reasons for that, because they do not do the correct plumbing hookups and sewer hookups.
And Mr. Chair, I still wish that you and others would explore a way, perhaps a de minimis level, you know, if you're not doing, kind of like we do in the farmers markets, you know, if you don't sell more than $5,000 worth of pickles at a farmers market, you don't have to have a license to do that. And, you know, I would think on this it'd be something similar. If you don't do more than $5,000 worth of plumbing work, So again, that I can go across the street and change my elderly neighbor's washer or on the sink, on the faucet. Yes, I'm touching the system, but, you know, I'm doing it for little or no money, and that I'd be legal in doing that. I would think you could find some reasonableness that even the plumbers and the associations around would agree with on that, again, for minor jobs, or if there's a way to describe that type of a job.
Mr. Chair and Representative Duncan and members, someone wants to go over across the street and change a faucet or help someone put a water heater in or something like that, the only way an inspector is going to know that that's going on is if they pull a permit. And most often they're not pulling permits. That's another reason that they should be doing it is then the city doesn't know what is and isn't being done or what improvements are being done to the home. But there has not been a... this has been going on for many, many years with the handy people doing this kind of work. One of the biggest complaints I get from licensed plumbers and licensed crafts is that the inspectors won't write the tickets, which I don't disagree with. I don't agree that they should be writing tickets to somebody fixing a faucet or changing a washer. I can certainly work on it, see if there's some number or level that we can work on, but at this particular time, I'd prefer to keep it in at this level and not open this bill up again.
Last comment, Mr. Chair.
Well,
I think you maybe hit on it. Maybe it's the permitted jobs that should require plumbers. Again, you're right. No one gets a permit when they go down to Menards and buy a water heater and install it or a new sink for their bathroom and install it. That's not a permitted job or one that I would even think to get a permit on if I did it in my house or I suspect anyone else here. Permitted jobs tend to be bigger jobs, remodeling jobs, major jobs, and perhaps that's the answer, Representative Mahoney, that on permitted jobs there should be plumbers involved.
Representative Mahoney.
There's the Assistant Director?
Commissioner.
Joachim wanted to comment on this particular issue.
Okay, Mr. Joachim.
Chair, committee members, the plumbing code addresses what needs to be done to install water piping and drain waste and vent piping. The provisions that have been discussed here about changing washers and faucets, that's not part of a plumbing code requirement. Any handyman can do that.
Okay.
If you're changing the tile floor in your bathroom, you can pull the water closet and that person can reset the water closet. Plumbing code addresses when you start to change the water piping locations and the valves and changing the drain, waste, and vent by moving it in a bathroom situation, then you would be required to have a licensed plumber if this provision goes through in the town's less than 5,000.
So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, and that's what I suspected, because there's all sorts of people that do these little jobs, and you've just confirmed they do not need it. It's only the major, major jobs, and any small town in my district can find a plumber if they're remodeling or building a home. That's not a problem. And again, Representative Mahoney also said everyone that's doing it now can be grandfathered in. So I don't see this as a problem for my rural cities.
Okay, Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, kind of following on what Representative Junkie was talking about, I often, not so much recently because I've been too busy, but I've done a lot of home handy stuff, plumbing and that sort of stuff. In fact, I have copper hooked up to galvanize, and for a few days after one of my jobs, I had natural gas coming out of my cold water faucet. But it was okay. I just used the hot. But I'm wondering, does this interfere in any way with my ability to plumb it on my own house?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, after your comments here, I think maybe we better put something in there. No, it doesn't. If you own if you are the principal owner of the residency, no, you don't need a. You can do whatever work you want to do in your own home. We're not addressing that. And again, members, The major mechanical contractors, the building officials, the building inspectors, both the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors and the Associated Building Contractors. This has been, everyone supports this particular provision in the bill, and I would ask that we vote that particular provision down.
Okay, Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I think I'd take issue with everyone supports this provision in the bill. Everyone that might have a self-interest probably does. Representative Mahoney, I think we ought to pass this amendment. At some point, where is just your own responsibility as a purchaser, as a homeowner, as a property owner to decide if you want a botched toilet put in that's a little crooked or doesn't flush? That's your own prerogative. You're going to have to clean up the mess, and you're going to probably get sick of it, and like you say, then you might think it's cheaper to pay the plumbing contractor to come out, but that is your own prerogative. So I think we ought to pass this amendment and where is the end of government going to stop? Just starting to regulate everything, every transaction anybody makes, and I just hope we don't keep going down this road of Big Brother government watching over everything Representative Junkie or I might do, and the constituents in our small towns. A lot of times it's a retired farmer that's moved to town that's done this for years that's picking up a little extra income part-time, full-time, whatever it is. But you know what? Part of the reason they aren't licensed and they haven't gone through tests and permits, they don't want to be hassled with all that paperwork, and they'll do just as good a job with or without that paperwork. And so that's my decision to decide if I want to hire them and get references, isn't it?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Well, we're all sitting here reading, and Representative Seifert, maybe you want to read along, and Representative Mahoney actually reading the bill here now. It doesn't appear they are deleting the under 5,000. It appears they're rewording it, because it still says having a population of 5,000 or more, and what they're doing is grandfathering in any individual not so licensed may do work. They're grandfathering in, it looks like, people in that town. It doesn't look like they're eliminating the 5,000, as I read it, and Representative Rukavina and Solberg, we've been reading this over and over, trying to see what they're doing. It looks like they're just recodifying some wording in that section, and that exemption for under 5,000 appears to still be there. Now, maybe you're reading it different. We're really reading it closer. We can't see what...
But Mr. Chair, I was reading it the same way. Mr. Chair, I was reading it the same way, but when Representative Mahoney said, well, I don't think 8 years ago, and I'm going to make everybody in town for 300 do this, I just said, okay, that's the second.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I don't know that it's doing what you're saying it's doing.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative House.
Representative Junkie, if you go to page 98.
Oh,
section 9.
He's not eliminating that section.
So 94.
Mr. Chair,
read down the line 28.
Pointing that out, I will move to delete that. and that is a little bit more clear that no person, firm, or corporation.
Okay, there it is.
Installing plumbing or install plumbing in connection with dealing in or selling of plumbing material supplies unless at times a licensed master plumber. Or in cities and towns with a population of 3,000 and 5,000 during the federal census, restricted master plumber who shall be responsible for proper installation. And the argument that I have.
Representative Seifert, we're going to have to be clear on what your motions are. And I have.
What are you doing?
You had an earlier motion.
So it's section 9?
I'll withdraw the other motion and move to delete section 9 on page 98.
Okay. So the first motion is withdrawn. Okay, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, the reason I bring this up, Representative Junkie, is if you are in Ghent, for example, 6 miles from Marshall, I have people who are putting in toilets in rental properties, friends, neighbors, etc., and they may move it from one part of the, you know, where they have to put in some elbows and stuff. And the plumber has told me, I've done this dozens of, not the plumber, the unlicensed handyman who's done it hundreds of times over 20 years, said, I can do this in Ghent, I can do it in Mineota, but I can't do it in Marshall. I said, what? That doesn't make any sense. What's the difference? And he says, the state codes will not allow me to put this shower in or to move the toilet to the other side of the room in Marshall, but it will allow me to do it in Ghent, even though the houses are the same job. And it's, and he said it's the same in Wilmer. You can't do it in Wilmer, but you can do it in Prinsburg. And that is a fact. And so a licensed plumber came out, and he said, yeah, that's right. He said the handyman can do it in Ghent, can install the shower, but they cannot do it in Marshall. He said, I have to go out in Marshall. I've got, this is my territory, because I've got the state law on my side. So, you know, we can talk about grandfathering in. He didn't say anything about grandfathering in means that you have to take the master plumber license and test exam and then pay $90. That's not grandfathering in. These handymen aren't going to pay all these fees and fill all this paperwork and drive to the cities and so on and so forth. They've been doing this for 20, 30 years. They know what they're doing. Just let them alone. It's the same as a graduated driver's license, Representative Rickovina. They just, you know, if you had a problem in the metro area, apply to the metro area, but leave us alone.
Sure. I just want to make a quick announcement here because it's 9 o'clock. The goal is to adjourn by 9:30, so the people who might be here for the Huntleyville House File 6083, we're going to add that to the agenda tomorrow morning. We have some additional time tomorrow morning because Ways and Means will not be meeting. Goal is still to try to get to the Osment bill as soon as we're done with this one. Did get a question as to whether I thought we would get to it or not. It's a little
Chair,
hard to predict depending on the discussion with these amendments. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, I kind of do sympathize with you, although, you know, I come from an area where that's extremely unionized, so most of our little plumbing shops are our union shops, but I kind of have a tendency to agree with you. I'm still sitting here trying to figure out how Junkie doesn't get slivers on that 2x4 toilet that the carpenter put in, but that's a whole other issue, I guess. I don't know about that one, but anyway, you know, Representative Mahoney, maybe you could bend a little bit on this one, because Representative Seifert, the bottom line is you're right. Nobody's going to complain about that handyman. That does go in there and continues to do the job anyhow, so I don't know how the enforcement of this is really going to work, but I guess the potential is there for somebody to get a ticket or slapped for doing something they've been doing for a long time. So, you know,
Chair,
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I will not bend. I don't believe that people in small towns should be served by people who don't know what they're doing. This bill, we have made, we've bent over backwards for these people that want to install plumbing. Representative Seifert, it's a bad idea. Your amendment's a bad amendment. All these people have to do is demonstrate that they've been doing it for 2 years, write an application, prove that they actually know something about plumbing, and write a $90 check to become a restricted master plumber or journeyman. And then they become part of the system that tells them the new kinds of pieces and parts that are coming out on the world today. It tells them how to do it better and faster. Gets them understanding the code and the amendments that come forward. Your people deserve to have good working people in their home. I think it's a bad amendment, and I would ask it be voted down. And if it's, this bill is going to be vetoed over that so be it.
The Representative House is on the list again.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stay out of the fight for now.
Okay. Representative Westrum, and if people could be brief, because I think we got a pretty good idea what the
Mr. Chair,
is, Representative.
given the flavor of this, I'm going to request a roll call.
A roll call?
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, first of all, as I said, a lot of these guys are retired. They don't want the paperwork. So they're going to just say, you know what, I'll just go to the coffee shop instead of helping out people that I know or doing other things. And that's what you're going to do is you're going to fence them out of the business. They aren't interested in doing government paperwork any more than possible. Secondly, you talk about they're the only ones that are going to know the products that are the best out there to use. Representative Mahoney, give our citizens some respect. Consumers are smart. They'll find stuff. And let me give you an example. On the farm, we have used what they call PEX pipe for years. Literally years, decades. I've also hired plumbers who only in the last couple years have plumbers started using PEX pipe as a new replacement for a copper. And you know what? Most of them tell me the reason they haven't ever went to PEX? Because copper takes longer and it's harder for the self, the do-it-yourselfer to use. And so as long as we keep it to copper, it's too complicated for the person to do themselves. But you know what, PEX? You can freeze it in the winter and it still is good in the spring when it thaws out. Copper doesn't do that. So don't tell me that it's only the plumbers that know the best products. Consumers out there are smart. They'll find good products. There's inventors all over the place that find good products. So I take a little issue when you start downgrading my citizens, my consumers, and the handymen that are out there doing these projects for their neighbors and for people in small towns, and probably should be doing them for even people in larger towns. But that's a fact.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Mahoney, my daughter built a house recently down in Rosemont. And my daughter recently built a house down in Rosemont and her husband, and they've made probably 7 or 8 trips, the construction people and the union people in and out of that house trying to fix wrongs. They got yellow stickers all over the place, walkthrough after walkthrough. They're still not satisfied, and most of that job is union. Now, I'm not being anti-union because I used to be a union president and know about union protection and jobs, but there's no guarantee that they're going to do any better work. And in fact, in a small town, you've probably got a better job quality with a small handyman than you do a union worker because there's personal buy-in. You know the person. I know, but then the 5 towns around me, usually if I call somebody for some help, and a handyman, I know them personally. They're going to do probably a better job. They're going to take a personal interest in it. So just having a license or a piece of paper in your hand doesn't mean you're going to do a great job. And we need these people to fill in the holes down there. If we have to get these people our license or force these people to get more credentials, it just doesn't work for us. So I just have a hard time with the comment about the quality of work versus union, non-union, and handyman.
Representative Mahoney, you've been joined at the table by Department of Labor and Industry. Did you want to comment?
I just wanted to say that there is...
You can identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm Nancy Lepink, and I'm General Counsel for the Department of Labor and Industry. The purpose of this was to provide for protection with regard to the plumbing code statewide and to have uniform standards across the state, and that then there was an understanding that there were many communities where there were obviously very competent people who had been installing plumbing for a long period of time, and therefore there was an effort made to provide only minimum requirements for those folks then to become what's classified as a restricted journeyman or restricted master plumber, the primary criteria being a demonstration that they had at least 2 years of experience performing doing plumbing work. And so consequently there was a desire to have all of the states be governed by common standards, but then to recognize that because that hadn't been the case up until the enactment of this law, to allow for those persons who had been engaging in this work to have this restricted master plumber license. And you're correct. It does require some interaction with the state, but it's fairly minimal, and the requirements are consistent with the comments that I've heard today, which is that if someone has demonstrated experience in the area, that they should then be allowed to continue engaging in that activity with what the department has characterized as a restricted license. So I think that it's an attempt to have compromise to see all of the issues and be as very cognizant of the concerns of rural Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay. With that, clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark? Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart? Instead?
Yes.
Rothwell?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Filthy? House? Huntley?
No.
Yaros? Junkie?
No.
Khan? Coles?
Aye.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani? Murphy, Otremba, Damar,
no.
Jeffen,
yes.
Poppy, Rukavina,
I'm gonna pass.
Sailor,
no.
Seifert,
yes.
Sertage, Severson,
yes.
Simon, Solberg,
yes.
Swigum. Keeson?
No.
Lavinia? Walker?
No.
And Westrum?
Yes. Earhart votes yes.
Tamar? Tamar?
I voted no.
Okay.
Representative Yaros, we're in the middle of a roll call.
No. No.
Representative.
You were normally voting yes to this.
Yeah. Yaros, are you fully informed?
No. No, you're not.
We're in the middle of a roll call, but for those who just came in, we have an amendment that the author of the bill would encourage a no vote on, and Representative Seifert would encourage a yes vote on.
During roll calls, Mr. Chair.
Just inform me, no debate. I said I said that the author is encouraging a no vote, and the minority leader, I said, is encouraging a yes vote. Beyond that, I gave no further information.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we're actually through the roll call.
Representative Yarrow.
No.
Pepin?
Poppy, that
would
be
Poppy. 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 Anyone else that's
Filthy.
Arrived?
Filthy.
No.
And Simon?
No.
Book of Ains changes to yes.
Tobrick changes to yes.
I'm passing because I have a brother as a plumber and an uncle and cousins, and so I'm just like 14-14.
The motion is defeated 14-14. We have an amendment that's been suggested by Mr. Marks, let's see, Mr. Marks, I think I'll just have you explain the amendment here, and Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 193, it's the next to last page,
there's a transfer which is designed to keep the general fund neutral here. The transfer does that for fiscal years 2008 and 2009. If the intent is to have no general fund tails on this bill, page 193, line 28, after the comma, after 2009, we should add, and each year thereafter.
So Representative Mahoney moves the amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering how many fee increases, and the governor is the only one blamed for fee increases. How many fee increases are in this bill that the Democrats are pushing?
$20 million
apartment
bill. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair. The department, the governor's Department of Labor and Industry is pushing a $2.6 million fee increase. I'm sorry, a $1,030,000 fee increase in the contractor recovery fees. The governor's Department of Labor and Industry is pushing the electrical inspection fee increase of $3,080,000. The governor's Department of Labor and Industry is pushing a $117,000 reduction. The governor's Department of Labor and Industry is advocating or pushing a electrical licensing fee increase of $19,000. And the advocates have got, they've got a $1.5 million, the governor's, I don't know if it's the governor or not, it's the legislature that put on, that required escalators to be inspected. The department told us it would take $1.5 million to do that, to start doing that. We've had that in law for a long time. So there's approximately $6,000 of fee increases that the governor has not authorized or advocated for.
Representative Seifert.
Just wanted to be fully informed, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have the motion before us then that House File, let's see, 1208, the second engrossment be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair, I'm going to request a roll call on final vote.
Okay, roll call has been requested.
Carlson?
Aye.
Anderson?
No.
Clark? Cornish? Earhart? Finstead? Brothel? Freiling? Atbart?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Silpe?
Yes.
House? Huntley?
Yes.
Darrels?
Aye.
Junkie?
Aye.
Kahn, Holt, Leader,
yes.
Mahoney,
aye.
Mariani, Murphy, Ochoa,
yes.
Tamar,
aye.
Close, Pepin,
no.
Poppy, Brookavina,
aye.
Sailor,
aye.
Seifert,
no.
Sertage, Severson, Simon, Solberg,
aye.
Swigum,
no.
Thiessen,
yes.
Wagenius, Walker,
yes.
Westrom,
no.
Also say.
Okay, motion carried, 16 yeses, 17 noes. 16 yes, 7 noes. Motion prevails. Thank you. And we now go to the claims bill. You Let's see, we have House File 2293, and the chair moves that House File 2293 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Osment, we also have the delete all amendments, so the chair moves that the delete all amendment A070949 be before us. Any discussion, that puts the bill in the form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Opposed? Carried. Motion carried. Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the claims bill. We have three members of the House that serve on the Claims Committee, Representative Anzels and Representative Loeffler and myself. And this is a bill that comes to us on an annual basis that is actually the work of the joint subcommittee between House and Senate on claims. And we looked at nearly 100 claims against the state of Minnesota. And this particular bill appropriates $50,333.69 from the general fund for fiscal year 2008 to the commissioners of corrections and public safety to pay 12 claims and to reimburse the Department of Corrections for smaller claims it has already paid. The bill also directs the Department of Revenue to reissue a property tax refund payment to a person that had a late or a check that they were not able to cash earlier. Section 1 is the provisions with regard to Department of Corrections claims, and Section 2 is the Department of Public Safety. Section 3 is Department of Revenue, and this is I can go into individual claims if people have concerns about them, but the subcommittee really did diligent work on this, looked at each of these and kind of combed through the issues, tried to come out with what we thought were fair and just decisions, and also the claims committee decided to try and work off any backloads that we had, any pending types of claims that were out there, and so we really kind of cleaned up the docket, and so this is, I would appreciate your support. I'll stand for questions.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osment, I see here that there's a claim for the Department of Public Safety for reimbursement regarding driver's license because of occasioned by his military service?
Correct.
What was that?
There was a situation, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, individual who had, when he was in the military service down in Florida, had a DUI, and this was years ago, and it was his license was suspended in the state of Minnesota. He was unaware, according to his information, was unaware that it had been suspended. Many years passed because he was a career military person. As he retired, he comes back to Minnesota and discovered he had not reinstated his license 20 years ago. And so now the cost to reinstate it was several hundreds of dollars. And so what we did is took that into consideration and reduced that amount down considerably.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I realize that you're going. I'm Craig Lindeke from the Revisor's Office. I've been.
Barely see you there, but
yes, I know. I can see you though, Mr. Chair. I've been counsel to the subcommittee for about 14 years, so I hope you'll let me talk for just a couple of minutes about what an experience that has been.
I think you deserve it after all of those years, and this is how many claims bills?
Well, it's 14 claims bills, okay. I guess. And
one a year.
And Representative Trinke didn't ever vote for one of them. I wish I wish he were here right now, in a way, so that I could ask him just as a going-away gift to me to vote for this claims bill. I'm going to be retiring this summer, so this will be my last claims bill. And I just wanted to thank the, my wife said, you know, it's not bad to thank the legislators for doing a good job once in a while. And so Bruce Anderson in particular, Representative Osment, People all the way back to Andy Steensma and Edgar Olson and Chair Bill Haas and others that I've probably forgotten have done a wonderful job at this. It's a fairly thankless little task, and they have two or three meetings a year and consider these claims, many of them from prisoners. And they've all over the years reflected that they have hearts. This isn't a bill that really involves applying the law. It's a bill that involves determining whether you think someone's gotten a raw deal. And these members have all been very attentive to the details of the problems that people suffer at the hands of government once in a while. And the members this year are wonderful, and in fact I want to thank, I know that leadership on the majority side isn't here right now, but they appointed Mr. Osmond to be chair of the subcommittee, and I think that was a wonderful thing to do because the other five members had no experience whatsoever. So we have a chair who has experience as a member of the subcommittee and who was a chair at one point. And it was a wonderful thing to do to appoint Representative Osmond so we could get off to a good start with someone who knew what he was doing. So I just want to thank everybody, and I appreciate your support for this bill.
And we want to thank you for your service. And this is the first, you and I visit every once in a while in the retirement room, and I didn't realize that you're this close to retirement. So thank you for your service.
Mr. Chair, you and Representative Sigum and Mike Yaros here and a few others have been here longer than I have. But I've been here 30 years, and it's been a wonderful experience.
And I hope your wife is watching. I think I don't know if most of the time we're televised. I'm not sure if we are today or not. Pardon?
I think Texas might be
this. Oh, is that right?
It's something to what's going on down here.
Pensions. Yeah, maybe they're the ones that are getting the coverage. But Representative Rukavina?
Chair, I just want to thank Sue Indecky too, because it's been a great guy, and it's given me a lot of advice over the years. Oftentimes I didn't take it, but you know, he always helped me, especially with IRRRB stuff. He drafted up good bills for me that I never actually got to move on them, some of them, but you know, it's people like that the public doesn't know what they do for us, and You've done a great job. I'm going to be sad to see you go. Maybe I should go with you. I know. The problem is my high five isn't as high as his. That's the problem.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I echo what Representative Rukavina said. Mr. Linicky, it's going to be a hard day. But I appreciate your service, and thank you for all the things that you've done for me while I was claims chair, and even just when I was not in that position, I just... appreciate all that you've done, and thank your wife for letting you be here.
Representative Sweckham.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and my thanks to Craig, too. Thank you, Craig, for your years of service. The interesting thing of the balance of Craig is that, Tommy, he drafted my IRRRB stuff.
That's it, fast either.
Okay, any other...
We're in the same boat.
Well, then, or Mr. Chair, I would also like to thank Craig for always putting a smile when you walk back there. He's sitting in just outside the chambers, and but I wish he would quit calling me professor.
And I've taken over in that position too.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Craig, did you have a claim against the state one time, or was somebody up in the revised office?
No, Mr.
On the gate. Of
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I didn't, but Sam Rankin did.
There it was.
A couple other people in our office did, and even Steve Wenzel's car got hit by that door in the parking ramp.
And if I recall right, Mr. Chair, it took a year for the claim, or better, to get the... paid by the state, so
the Department of Administration was very unenthusiastic about paying for the cars that got hit.
Now, one thing we could do is refer this bill to taxes, because former Representative Prinke often sits in on the tax committee meeting. you could make some comments there about his no votes, but at any rate,
Mr. Chair, on one occasion, when I'm on the floor with the claims bill, I used to walk over to Phil Krenke and say, come on, please vote for it this year, and he just loved to vote against it. And he had a couple of followers who, if he would vote against the bill, they would vote against it as well. And I said, well, one of his followers had not been reelected that year, and I said, well, you're going to be all alone in voting against the bill this year. And he said, oh, no, I can get four or five more. Just watch me. And he did.
He did, okay. Representative Yarrell?
Oh, yeah. We want to thank you, Craig, and great guy, great lawyer. And thank you for all the work, even if you didn't give my constituents any Richard Ophino any money.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Mr. Yarros, your constituent, Richard Ophino, is an unusual character.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none, then the chair removes his motion that House File 2293, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yeah, I got a sign.
Oh, meeting adjourned.